You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 45 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, November 12th, 2008. I'm Martin Spriggs.
And I'm Sally Draper.
And we're your hosts for a weekly conversation about technology and how it might impact your ministry. This is a show where anything is fair game as long as it's about technology, hardware, software, the web, or anything else you, the listener, wants to talk about. Hopefully we can touch on something that makes a difference for you. Good morning, Sally.
Hi, Martin. How are you this morning?
I'm excited. You know, we're at show 45, and gaining on almost 1 year of podcasts.
That's right. I was thinking we'd have to come up with some kind of special celebration for our first podcast in January of 2009. That'll be 1 year. It's hard to believe.
Yeah, the first Wednesday in January was our first podcast. So we're going to have to do something special.
Yep. Coming up.
Yep.
So did you guys have Snowfly this weekend?
I kind of ignored it. And we're not speaking the S word in our household yet. So it's an after Thanksgiving thing, so anything before Thanksgiving we just kind of ignore. But the deck is a good snow collector, we're finding.
Ah, very good. So that deck is coming in handy for something, huh?
Yeah, that's right. I bought a special snow shovel for it yesterday. The snow shovel that we've been using must weigh, I don't know, like 25 pounds, it seems like, you know, even without snow on it, one of those big metal things, and was not optimal. So I had a Lowe's gift certificate. I don't know if everybody has Lowe's in their area, but it's like a Home Depot. So I used part of that for, I bought two snow shovels. I went into the store, and the kind of the ergonomically friendly ones that I liked all had a metal edge on the bottom. And I thought, well, if I'm going to shovel any snow off of my brand new deck, there's no way I'm going to use that. So I bought a cheapy plastic one that I think will do the trick there. So I'm kind of like a new car owner. You know, I don't want to scratch the paint. I want to make sure that the deck stays nice and pristine as long as possible, because we haven't even really used it yet. So it's I'm treating with TLC at this point, even with the snow shovel selection.
Very good. Well, I was excited that you put together a few photos of this famous deck we've been hearing about. So we'll have something to share with our listeners. They can get a visual of all that hard work you've been doing this
summer. I suppose we can put a link to that in the show notes if anybody is really – we'll see how many people are really interested in this ongoing deck thing that we do on the Wells Tech Podcast. But and you can see the back of my house and, you know, how long my grass gets and all that good stuff too. So. Kind of an inside and personal for the Spriggs family.
There you go.
So what are we going to talk about today, Sally?
Oh, I've been looking forward to this show, Martin, because we're going to talk about National Distance Learning Week, which is something we're celebrating in Wells this week.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of an official designation that we decided to participate in, going on all over the country. Different colleges, universities, businesses, that kind of thing, are showcasing their distance learning offerings. And we, you know, put our minds together and decided that Wells had quite a few distance learning offerings that we could showcase as well, and just want to bring some extra attention to that. So I'm excited to have a chance to talk about that a little this morning.
Yeah, and that kind of jives nicely with your job description. Most of our listeners probably know that you're not located here in Milwaukee at the Synod Administration Building, although you continue to work for the Synod as a part-time technical trainer. But that has probably enhanced your senses for or sensitivity for distance learning topics, because essentially that's what you're involved with day in and day out, is, you know, training via a distance learning model.
That's right. We have employees, obviously, heavily concentrated at the Senate Administration Building, but we also have people literally all over the world that we're trying to connect with and give them access and the knowledge to use the systems that make the Senate keep going day after day. And so, you know, being able to communicate that information in clear terms, maybe like taking them down a path of learning so that they make the connections in their brain that help them understand the software they need to work with. That's a particular challenge, and it's actually a lot of fun to kind of build those systems for training to get that word out to our various audiences.
So when we talk about distance learning, what are the components, you know, that our listeners should have in their mind when we say distance learning? What do we mean?
Well, it actually can take a lot of different modalities, basically, but it's being able to convey information typically via the internet using different multimedia resources. So there can be written resources as well as audio and video resources that teach someone something, and not a face-to-face training opportunity, but more something a self-study person working via the computer to learn whatever it is that they're interested in learning. Mm-hmm. I've been doing some distance learning myself to learn Spanish via the Live Mocha website that I talked about a few weeks ago on the show, and they do it in a variety of different modalities. There's some things I listen to. There's the written word. I see it displayed on the screen. I have to type it back to them, mm-hmm. and there's even some video components to it as well. So it can take a lot of different flavors. Basically, you have an objective in mind. You want your participants to know or to do something when they've completed the learning opportunity, and mm-hmm. you present whatever you need to get them to that point in an online fashion.
Sure. So when we're talking about distance learning, we're not just talking about any particular field of study, and we're not talking about you know, any one way of doing it, but it can mean all kinds of different things. You mentioned you're learning Spanish, and that's obviously, you know, kind of a one-on-one, but many distance learning opportunities can be one-to-many, of course, or it can be asynchronous or synchronous. It depends on your style. So are we going to have a Spanish version of the Wealth Tech Podcast? Is that what you're studying for? Because I got some catching up to do. go ahead, say something for us in Spanish.
I'm only on lesson 3, so we have a ways to go if we want to go Spanish with the Wealth Tech Podcast.
Okay. All right. So what are some of the things that are available if somebody wants to learn a little bit more about National Distance Learning Week? Are there resources that we have available? Are there things that we want people to look at?
Yes, there sure are. What we're going to point people to is a special website we've put together compiling all of the Wells distance learning opportunities. And you can get to that at wells.net/jump/NDLW for National Distance Learning Week. Mm-hmm. And there you're going to find just an easy-to-use, very user-friendly website. The information on the site is divided into 3 main categories. You can look at Bible study materials, you can look at Martin Luther College coursework that you can complete online, and you can look at various materials that support the ministry, either by called workers or volunteers, just different ministry resources and ways that you can enhance your skills in those areas. Mm-hmm. What I was excited about was the variety of things that we could put together here on this website. When I started digging and looking at all the different work being done across the Senate, I found just a lot of different resources. I don't know, on the Bible study page, there's probably 8 to 10 different Bible studies that you can do completely online. Some of them are video series that you can watch. Some of them are online interactive where there's quizzes and things. And also some of them are just reference materials, like a great online glossary of religious terms, as well as our topical Q&A where you can do research on different questions that have been asked on the Q&A on the Wells.net website.
Mm-hmm. Super. Please check that out there. It's extremely well done, and it was surprising to me to see, once you collected all of the things, what is available. Some people probably don't know that Wells has somebody dedicated, at least part-time, to distance learning. within the Synod. So we have a director of distance learning who is Professor Jim Grenwald, who we've had on the show early on in the early days of the Welsh Tech podcast. And he is the one that manages Martin Luther College's distance learning efforts. And that's, according to Jim, extremely popular. They fill up every course that they offer there, and I'm sure that that will be an area of focus as we move forward. It just makes a lot of sense, certainly on that level, but I think there's obviously application on the congregation and school level as well. So if somebody out there listening wants to kind of dabble a little bit into distance learning, what kind of tools are we talking about? Are there existing tools? Is it hard to, is there, are there large barriers to entry to kind of get involved with distance learning?
Actually, no, it's really simple. A lot of it is just online web browsing, basically, and then your typical web browser plugins allowing you to view maybe flash video or listen to different audio files or whatever. Your computer's probably going to be equipped for that. And so I don't think there's any major barrier to entry. The links are all provided there. It's just a matter of checking it out and finding something that interests you.
So I suppose there's a couple ways you could go. I mean, you could go with a true distance learning tool like what we use for Wells.net University, which is the Moodle platform, right?
Correct. Open
And,
source.
right, open source. You'd have to find a place to install it. Are there subscription type services where you could just say, give me a Moodle install, or do you have to have a server for that, your own server?
Actually, I think you do have to have a server, but there are some different vendors that specialize in Moodle installs on your behalf once you contract for some server space and that kind of thing.
Okay, so that would be probably the very focused approach to distance learning, but you could probably put together the appropriate tools all by yourself through what we could call Web 2.0 tools, right?
That's right. So if you're interested in conveying your own distance learning message, then maybe you do it by posting to a wiki or a blog and linking to videos and survey quizzes and things like that you create with other tools. I know Gail has mentioned that before, that she really likes using Wiki Spaces and using the plugins and things that are part of that. And you certainly could build your own distance learning delivery using those Web 2.0 tools, all pretty much for free, and just kind of mashing them up into a final product that teaches someone something.
Yeah, I'm sure you could use Yahoo or Google Groups. You could use Google Apps or a combination of all those, and all of those are free and make it probably pretty easy to mash up a whole distance learning solution, kind of tailored to meet your particular needs. There's almost everything out there, and obviously Web 2.0 tools are really optimal for this kind of thing. Those of you that are final web users for the Wells web hosting program, you probably have enough right there to do the same thing. You have discussion boards, you have document libraries, you have essentially the startings of something that you could put together for your own distance learning kind of environment, and you wouldn't even have to leave the comfort of your own website. So there's, I think there's lots of options there. You just have to think about what are the major components that you're going to need, and maybe the best place to start is small. Just pick a component. Maybe it's a discussion board. Maybe it's just some online reading. Maybe it's a wiki. Whatever it is, just put a couple things together and have a plan for where you want to go, of course, but introduce it slow and see what happens.
Yeah, I think the plan is actually the hard part,
Yeah.
Martin. All these cool tools are really pretty easy to use,
Yeah,
but that
don't start. Yeah, I
object.
wouldn't start with the tool. That's probably a mistake that a lot of people would make. Say, hey, here's this cool technology. Let's see what we can do with it. I think you really need to be objective driven and determine this is what we want to accomplish with a distance learning strategy. Measure results and then pick the appropriate tools that match that need. So I think that's great advice.
So,
Let's move on. Thank you, Sally. National Distance Learning Week. What was that website address again?
it's wells.net/jump/NDLW.
National Distance Learning Week, NDLW. Great. Thanks for your work on that, Sally. I know that's been kind of a labor of love for you, and hopefully people will take advantage of that. National Distance Learning Week. Let's move on to our interview, which has actually nothing to do with distance learning, but it will stay in the web realm. We talked to John Simonson, who's an owner of a company called WebStream Dynamics. One question that we get a lot on this podcast, and I get personally, is how do I optimize my website for search engines? It's called SEO, search engine optimization. And John Simonson spends his day job time and some of his non-day job time helping congregations and other organizations figure out how best to organize and build their websites so that they can be found by, obviously, popular search engines. And I think most people would be surprised that most of your web visitors are getting to that site, not by just typing in your URL or clicking on an outside link, but are finding your site probably through a search engine search or the search results. So that's a great place to spend some energy and time, and our conversation with John, I think, highlights that. So let's talk to John Simonson. Joining us today is John Simonson of WebStream Dynamics, Wells member, and great to have you on the show, John. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be on the show. Thank you, Mark.
Why don't you, first of all, tell us a little bit about who John Simonson is and a little bit about your company, WebStream Dynamics.
John Simonson is a web developer, has been for over 10 years. Uh-huh. I used to be in the business world.
That's a long time in the web world.
Yes, it is. And I saw an opportunity that really needed people that understood not only technology, but the business world, marketing, because that's the way I see it. It's a sales, it's a marketing tool, it's an information vehicle, the web, and felt that WebStream Dynamics could really help a lot of businesses reach out through the Internet and make it a good tool to add to their marketing and sales efforts.
Mm-hmm. And you are a Wells member at what congregation, John?
Good Shepherd in West Bend.
Okay. And have you been able to help them out as a web developer?
Yes, I've helped out on the I got them going with Final Web and everything. And we have added different things and used it as the way to obviously reach out to the community. And then there are other people that are involved as well, you know, working on the site, trying to keep it up, mm-hmm. as well as the pastors.
So, John, we were excited to have you on the show today, particularly in terms of marketing. Maybe we don't always think about marketing our churches, but I wondered if you had some particular insight into ways that churches can get the word out about their website. Are there particular strategies they should be using?
Absolutely, Sally. There are a lot of different ways. You look at it today, the Internet is both, you know, you intermix online and offline. So when I say that, you know, offline through the church, through the school, the things you hand out, the things on Sunday, you remind people, you know, you have a website, you put it in all the print so you can drive, you know, get them to the site. And then online, obviously there are ways through the search engines and different things to market your site. Through either the natural search called organic search, which is where you get the free listings on Google and Yahoo, and that comes through knowing which keywords, as well as building links from other websites to your website. So those become real important, having incoming links to your site as well.
That drives, I assume, the relevance engine, as we would call it, on, you know, Google and Yahoo. The more external links Google is going to look at and say, hey, this site must be popular, perhaps more relevant to a search term than maybe one that only has a couple. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Correct. That they look at it, Google has a patent on the link popularity, mm-hmm. where they look at if you have two websites, let's say they're very similar, but this one website has, let's say, 10 links coming to it from other websites, and the other site has only one link coming from the website, those 10 links, Google's going to look at and say, oh, this site must be more popular than the other one, So we're going to give it a boost in rankings for those type keywords.
Mm-hmm. There's, you know, when I do workshops on this, one thing that I suggest each congregation do is type in a simple search and try and predict what a visitor, a potential church visitor, might type in for a search. And typically I'll say, well, type in Lutheran and then your town's name and see where you fall, you know, on the relevance engine. So if you are you on the first page, second page, third page, you don't appear at all. And based on the kind of those typical search criteria, that's maybe a good way to see, you know, how you're faring. And then some of the things that you talked about would be ways to increase that. So one way to drive yourself toward the top when you do Lutheran and West Bend, Wisconsin, would be those external links. How do you increase the number of external links? That seems like it's out of your control.
Actually, there are different ways to do it. And first off, just to mention, too, that when you do a search for any type of keyword phrase in Google, let's say, 80% of the click-throughs come from the first page of the search results.
Right, right.
So I try to really stress to companies and that with a website, you got to work to get to page one because that's where all the action is on page one.
Right.
So when you look at those incoming links, there are different ways. Number one, the churches could be linking to each other so that the church websites, so that's going to help build it because you also have relevant content on all those sites, and that's what Google will look at and Yahoo.
Mm-hmm.
So by linking to each other, that can really help bring up your link popularity.
Okay.
The links that you put in, also the words you use in the links become real important. So if we use Good Shepherd in West Bend as an example, if in the link the words were that you're going to click on, click here for Good Shepherd, Lutheran School, Church, West Bend, Wisconsin, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now those words become...
You've got them all in there, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We call that geo-targeting or geographic targeting that you also want to, with local search today, you want to be able to use words that are going to not only trigger the person to click on it, but also for the search engines to pick up that, oh, this church school is in West Bend, and so that gives you higher relevancy when somebody types those words in.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one thing I wanted to bring out in this conversation, and correct me if I'm wrong, John, is the fact that a lot of times we focus on those search terms being in our metadata, that behind-the-scenes data where we capture keywords that we want people to find our site using. But it's important that those terms actually show up on our web pages as well. Isn't that correct?
Correct. Which are extremely important, behind the page or, you know, under the hood, whatever you want to call it, in the source file, you have a page title tag and you have a meta description tag that are both used by the search engines. If you look at Google and you do a search, that first line you see is going to be the title tag from that page that they've spidered and put up an index. At the same time, the meta description, if it's well written, will also be used, and both of those should have the keywords that are most relevant by the users that are searching for you, and then you want to also put those words within the page itself.
Mm-hmm.
So you have it not only in the top, the title, the meta description, and also within the page.
John, there are a lot of services out there. Most of the major hosting providers offer this as an add-on option, is search engine submission subscriptions. And so they guarantee I will submit you to, you know, 60 of the top search engines. Is that a waste of money, or is there some value in, you know, paying for those kinds of things to get you indexed in those search engines?
Those, for most part, those are really a waste of money.
Mm-hmm.
The reason being, number one, the majors want you to submit individually, manually to them,
mm-hmm.
instead of an automatic submission.
Right.
There are also a lot of directories out there in different things that they're going to submit to that are not even relevant to the searchers that are going to search the keywords. And these websites, you know, that they're going to stick you in may even penalize you somewhat as far as your rankings.
Right.
There are some directories, like Google has demoz.org, where I do recommend you go submit, you look up your directory that is best for you, because that is a directory and it's not a search engine, and you submit your website to them, and it's free. But it does help boost your rankings.
Sure.
And it takes a while to get in there. And there are other directories, too, that are out there that can help, you know, boost your rankings as far as listings. But for the majority of them, they're just a waste of time and money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would assume that, you know, it would be worth your effort to kind of look around and see what directories are out there that you could submit for free. Obviously, that's another external linking to you. But also some of the, you know, the locals, you know, if your newspaper has a website that has a listing of churches and church addresses, make sure that, you know, you're listed in there as well.
Absolutely. Anywhere, you know, in the local community, Chamber of Commerce, newspapers, if they'll put a listing with a link to you, that will definitely help. I mean, it does two things. One, somebody who's on the site will click and go to your site. Two, it helps boost your rankings with the search engines.
Very good. Lots of good ideas for our churches to take into consideration, and definitely worth their time to get their name out there so that people can find them. You know, we've talked about before on this show, more and more people do their church shopping first online. So you want them to find you as a starting point so that you can show them what you're all about.
When you're thinking about how to build a website, or as a congregation is thinking about what should be on that homepage, do you have any advice for congregations as they think through that process as far as their strategy? Should it be focused on the potential church visitor? Can you mix and match with internal communications for your members? What do you advise a congregation to do in those kinds of areas?
I would really advise that first thing you do is lay it out and think about the person who's going to come to your website. And what are their needs? And they are going to be, for the most part, task-driven. People today are not just browsing the web just for fun anymore when
Right.
they first got on the web. Today, most people are task-driven. They understand the web. And when they get to the church website, you know, you want to fulfill whatever their needs are. It may be to see, you know, what are the church services and the hours. It may be a member looking for, you know, something among the schools or something like that. Mm-hmm. So you want to be able to clearly give them paths to those type things that they're looking for. So you really want to make a list and try to look at it from the user standpoint, not your standpoint of, you know, what are the type needs when they come here? Are we fulfilling them very quickly with as few amount of clicks as possible? What can we put on the homepage that's going to really make it easy for them? I call them call to actions.
Mm-hmm.
You want some call to actions that are going to, okay, they're on the site, and they may be interested in being a member or joining the church. So somewhere you want something that's going to be a call to action to try to click here, something to take them to a page that really tells them, you know, why join the church.
Mm-hmm.
In the community and everything.
Yeah. Or here's a Bible information class that you can get involved in.
The Bible.
Yeah, exactly. So something that you know, has, it's kind of objective driven. Now they're here. What do you want them to do? You know, what's the result of this site visit? Okay.
And you know, I'm just going to mention too with Google Analytics, which I know Sally's talked about on previous emails to the different churches, that you can use that to help see if your different pages are really getting the traffic, you know, are they being useful? Are the people being able to, let's say, Bible classes, or if they're not getting to the Bible classes, is there something we're not doing right on the homepage to help make it clear to get them there? So you can really analyze, you know, what's working or not working.
Right. Yeah, I think this is difficult for congregations to really get their arms around unless they intentionalize the web development process, where they think through what is our strategy, what's the effort necessary to do this right, versus, oh, we need a website. Let's get something up. Let's find content. Let's throw it out there because we just need to be on the web. There's a big difference between that and kind of intentionalizing this communication mechanism.
Absolutely, and it's not just churches, stores, it's every business.
Right. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, sure.
you know, there's this thing, I got to be on the web.
Mm-hmm.
But why are you on the web? You know, what's the purpose?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you fulfilling some needs?
Right.
You know, if you're not, why are you there? So,
right.
You know, a lot of times it just helps to, you don't have to be on the internet, just put it on paper, start writing it down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, drawing things out, mapping, creating a flow chart, and trying to make sense out of, you know, what are we building here, you know, before you ever go build it.
Right, great. Well, John, thank you very much for your time. We recognize that, you know, you have a growing business and that dominates a lot of your time, and we're happy that you could spend 15 minutes with us. Thank you for that. Blessings on your work there at Good Shepherd in West Bend, Wisconsin, and we'll be keeping an eye on that website.
Okay. Thank you very much, Martin.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, John.
Bye.
Well, we want to thank John for spending some time with us. He has some great ideas and I think very easy to implement.
Absolutely. I think it's well worth the investment because, you know, you can have the greatest site in the world, but if no one's finding it, it's not doing you a whole lot of good to have that great website out there.
Mm-hmm.
So take a look at some of the links. John shared just a vast amount of links to include in our show notes today, and so you'll want to check those out. He even shared a link to a little analysis tool that he developed and hosted on his website that'll take a look at your website and give you feedback on your meta tags, those under the hood, behind the scenes programming tags that help search engines index your site.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll want to check that out in our show notes today.
Yep, little health checkup. Thanks, John, for spending some time with us. Up next, our picks of the week. Sally, what's your pick this week?
Well, today, Martin, I'm going to point people to an upgrade of the MindJet Mind Manager software. This is
yes, that's what we had a pick. I think that was one of my picks early on, right?
Right. This is the mind mapping software that we've come to rely on very heavily to mm-hmm. actually make this show happen for us. We are just always looking at a mind map as we're talking through the topics of the week, and MindJet is one of the forerunners of the commercial software in the mind mapping realm. And as of Tuesday the 11th, yesterday now, they have released a new version of their software, which is a fairly major upgrade. I got to sit in on a webinar where they demonstrated the software, and there's some really nice enhancements to it. So if you're a MindJet user already, or if you're looking for a mind managing tool, this is one that you may want to consider. They've shared a link to a free trial download spot, and we'll put that in the show notes, and just check it out. There's a lot of enhancements. It's a lot more integrated, so you can see links and files and things right there in the software rather than opening a separate application to view associated content and things. They've made sharing the maps a lot easier with a PDF version that's interactive, and it's a pretty sweet upgrade, so I encourage you to check it out.
Just the general topic of mind mapping is one that I want to encourage people to think about, whether you use Mind Manager or one of the other tools, FreeMind we've talked about in the past, and a few others. There's a couple of Web 2.0 apps that are doing the same thing. It's a lifesaver. I think now in terms of 1 o'clock to 11 o'clock, and those of you that know mind mapping know what I'm talking about, but basically mind mapping is radiant thinking where you have a central topic and then you branch off from 1 o'clock all the way around to 11 o'clock with your ideas, and you drag and drop, and you know, you build out a map based on that radiant thinking. But it has really helped brainstorming and our show management. Hopefully people can tell that the show is managed, right?
Hopefully, yeah.
That's where we spend our time, and as Sally mentioned, that's what we look at on our screen when we're talking to you, is what's at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, and so on and so forth. And we're probably, what, at about 5 o'clock right now as far as the mind mapping.
5 o'clock, that's right.
Okay.
Just one more note on mind mapping. I've really made it an objective in my tech time with the students at our school to give them mind mapping skills as well. I think it's a forward thinking tool that is going to allow them to organize notes and to work through papers and all those kind of things that they have in their future studies and that kind of thing. So I want to make sure the students are getting some exposure to mind mapping too, and I encourage other teachers to do that as well.
Yeah, I think there's a common tool in the academic world called, I think it's Inspiration, is that right? That's a similar mind mapping tool. It's a little bit different name. And I've also heard mind maps referred to as graphic organizers in some circles as well, at least in the elementary school level. So lots of names for it, but essentially the concept is the same. So check out that pick of the week. It's free to try. Mind Manager 8. Great, great pick, Sally. Mm-hmm. Mine is a hardware pick. I spent a lot of time on the phone, and more we're using Skype and voice over IP or VoIP to communicate. So it's helpful not to have a headset on all day. So I use, and one tool that we use for some of our world missionaries is we're trying to do a little more distance learning, so it ties nicely into the distance learning concept, is a speakerphone. That is basically USB-based. So you want a good quality one, especially if you're going to use it a lot. And one that I would highly recommend, although it's not the cheapest kit on the block, is one from Clear One. It's called the Clear One Chat 50. It's kind of a personal USB-based speakerphone, but it you install a little bit of software. It's a box, maybe it's 5 inches by 5 inches with a big speaker in the middle, with a mute button and volume buttons, and that's basically it. But basically, when you load the software, it appears as another audio device on your machine. I think it works with Windows and with Mac, but it gets really good quality. And the one thing that you really want to check out when you're evaluating speaker phones is duplexing, so that you're not talking over each other, or you're breaking up when two people are talking at the same time. And this particular product does a great job at that. So I use it all the time. As I said, it's the one we're recommending our world missionaries use when they're doing distance learning. Just makes life a lot easier. We'll put a link to the product in the show notes. You may be able to get good pricing through a local vendor for charity or nonprofit pricing. But check that out. I think it's in the $150, $175 range. It'll depend on the local reseller, you know, in your area. You can get them online as well. But for larger audiences, I think there's something called the ClearChat 150, which will support about four or five people in a small room. So if you're looking for more of a conference room thing, that's an option as well. So Clear One Chat 50 is my pick of the week.
Very good. Thanks for that, Martin.
Sure. What is going on in the Wells world that we want to make sure our people do not forget about this coming week?
Well, coming up this Sunday, November 16th at 2 p.m. Central Time, there's going to be a live conference. A live concert. That's the word I'm looking for. Broadcast over our Streams audio video network on the live tab, you'll find the Western Regional Choral Fest that's coming from Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School in the New Ulm area. And I understand they're expecting about 300 kids to come in from all over the country. Mm-hmm. Here in Sleepy Eye, we're going to be hosting the kids from Rocky Mountain Lutheran High School. We're looking forward to having 20 or so kids from Colorado staying in various member homes here in Sleepy Eye. They're going to be here for 3 days leading up to the concert, practicing nonstop. And so the concert, sacred concert on Sunday afternoon should be one that you don't want to miss. Again, you'll find it on the Streams website, streams.wells.net, on the live tab, and we'll have a link to that in our show notes.
Great. And the kids do a great job. I was down in Crete, Illinois. We were streaming last Sunday. This was every other year they do a national one, and this happened to be the year where they split up into two locations. So 8 schools were at Crete, Illinois, at Illinois Lutheran, and we were able to stream that. And over 300 viewers were looking at that. So they do a great job, and I'm sure they'll do a great job up at New Ulm, Minnesota. So check that out this Sunday. Those aren't available via archive because of copyright regulations, so you have to tune in real time. So set your clocks, 2 o'clock Central Time on Sunday.
Very good.
Looking forward to it. Community feedback, Sally, is next. Who is talking to us?
Well, first of all, I wanted to just make mention of our Facebook group. We do have a Wells Tech group out on the Facebook website, and I'm so excited because we're up to 94 members now, last time I checked at least. It may be more even, but 94 members coming up on that magic 100-member mark in our Facebook group. So if you aren't yet a member of the Wells Tech Facebook group, go out and join so that we can hit 100 members. That would be really exciting
for us.
Yeah,
maybe you could be the 100th member. Not that we're going to give you anything special. Other than satisfaction that you're number 100. But yeah, let's keep that growing. That's a great a way to network and bring people together and talk about different things. And all of the stuff that we do gets posted there as well.
That's right. We also heard from Ryan Rosenthal. He's a frequent listener, contributor. He's from Faith Lutheran in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, and he sent us a really cool link just last night, Martin. I haven't had a chance to check it out yet. I don't know if you did, but what he explained in his email was that, as we're all probably aware, there's a Project Gutenberg that is a process where they're putting free text of books that are in the public domain. He used the example of The Legend of Sleepy Hollow is out there, and you can download it. You can even print it out and give it to your class to read, as long as you keep their logo and things like that on it from the Project Gutenberg site. Well, what Ryan has found and what's so exciting is that there's a companion audio site where people are recording these public domain books and sharing them for free. So not only can you download the text, but you can actually download an audio book and use it for free in whatever way. You know, use it for your own personal listening or share it in your classroom or whatever. And so just a really cool tool. I'm struggling to pronounce the URL.
LibriVox? Yeah, good question. Okay. We'll have to have Ryan on to talk a little bit more about this, and he can actually pronounce it for us. Or we could actually go to the site. Maybe they have a pronunciation guide there for us laymen. But, yeah, that sounded really cool, and I think the concept is going to be one that will be a great asset to the classroom, where we've got more and more of these things kind of available. You did say the quality kind of goes up and down because these are not all professional speakers, of course, like you have on Audible, for instance. But the price is right, right?
Yeah, I like that price tag for sure.
Okay. We had a couple other contributors for feedback, for the feedback section, which we're going to hold off on. Ray Brown and Dave Hoyp both gave us feedback on a couple different concepts, but I'm going to share those with you now because we're going to save those for maybe a discussion topic on future shows, one about video email and one about using sites that have questionable approaches to business practices or even content, which is, I think, a great topic to talk about because we're in a world where, obviously, we're in the world but not of the world. So we have to be thinking about you know, who do we associate ourselves with, what services do we use, the whole boycotting thing. Great stuff there. So we have some very intriguing topics coming up. Speaking of topics coming up, next week we're going to talk about what I call event-driven marketing. A lot of church websites, in fact, most of our church websites across the Synod are really pretty, I would still call them, and maybe Sally, you'd agree, pretty static. You basically have the same information on the homepage. Certainly, it doesn't change significantly when you're going from day to day, week to week. But that's really not the flavor of what we do as a church. We have different things coming up all the time. And Advent and Christmas is a great time to give your website a facelift to make it better represent what's going on during that festival season. So we're going to talk about changing up the website to reflect new things going on with your church, how easy it is to do, and some ideas for doing it. So check that out next week. Also, we'll be having Brian Schaefer on again. He was our very first interview on the Wells Tech podcast 45 episodes ago to talk about some new enhancements to the Wells Web Hosting Program, Final Web, their product. They've got some good things coming up that I think our Final Web listeners will be interested in hearing about, which should be launching very, very soon. So tune in next week for that. Sally, anything else this week?
Nope, I just really encourage you, one more plug for the National Distance Learning Week website. Check out the link in our show notes and find something new to learn out there in the Wells world. It's very exciting.
And as always, please tell us what you're thinking, what you want us to talk about, what you're doing. We just get a ton of ideas now, and we just can't get enough. So continue to contribute. And again, this is a joint conversation. We would love to hear you, to talk about what you're talking about, what you're interested in. So wellstech.wells.net is the place to go. Thank you for all of the contributors, and hopefully those who haven't contributed yet will find a way or a reason to do so. Let's close our show with the beautiful music of In His Service. And I don't know about you, Sally, but when I turn on the radio now before Thanksgiving, I'm really not ready for Christmas music. But we're going to play some Christmas music. we're getting close. And because this is a beautiful song, it's called Gabriel's Message from the album In His Time. So here is In His Service, Gabriel's Message. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.